Welcome to the Weekend Warriors Fishing Podcast, presented by 13 Fishing Canada. Make your own luck. We're here to scratch that angling itch and talk everything fishing. Join us as we sit down with special guests from across the industry. Now, here's your hosts, Brandon Cater and Logan Lewis.
Well, Brandon, it's been a little bit. How are you doing?
Good, man. I've been pretty busy. The weather's been not too shabby, and yeah, life's pretty good. Can't complain. Got to sit down, do another exciting episode of the Weekend Warriors Fishing Podcast with yourself and a previous guest that we had on the show, and somebody that you had the pleasure of living up in the boonies with. So things are going pretty dang good, I must say.
That's good. That's good. Yeah, this weather's been it's been nice. Little different when I was up there. It was definitely hot some days, but the humidity is ridiculous down here compared to the Northwest Territory. So that took a bit of getting used to. But yeah, we've had some nice weekends.
Yeah, it's been fantastic. I mean, I haven't been able to get out to the lake too much. You know, looking at Instagram stories and Snapchats, everybody seems to be enjoying the lake weather. And man, would I kill to get out and do some surfing or some skiing, even just some fishing, man. Like we do this podcast, and I haven't been out fishing as much, nearly as much as I would like this season. You know, watching everybody's stories on social media and stuff, it's been a treat. I hope you guys are all catching big fish. I know with this big heat wave and it transitioning, you know, into July, we're at the end of July now. You know, jig and wrap season is here. A lot of people are, you know, using those glide baits and catching big, big walleye this time of year. So yeah, I want to get out. I need to catch some fish. Just got to find the time.
Yeah, no, exactly. That's both been kind of busy. I think I was back for 1 week from the Northwest Territories. And then the following Tuesday evening, I drove up to my girlfriend's place in Flin Flon and was up north there for, I guess, until that Sunday. So I was just right back up north kind of thing. And then get back home and worked last week, but my birthday was last week, so that went by quick as well. And now I'm going right back up north again to a friend's camp. So it's kind of, I've been lucky enough to be fishing. So I maybe I've taken some of your fishing time with the amount I'm doing more than I normally do, and maybe I've just stolen some of that from you.
I know, it seems like you just got back from the Northwest Territories, and then all of a sudden you're like, hey, sayonara, I'm out of here, I'm going up by Flin Flon. And it's like, all right, okay, see you later. And then now we finally get time to sit down, do a pod, and you're just like, hey, I'm out of here Wednesday. I'm heading back up north. I'm just like, oh man, like the things I would do to like go with a line up north, and you're just back and forth. Like you're putting on more miles than.
Oh yeah. Oh, the miles are crazy. Luckily I drove my mom's car up, which is like twice. I don't even know how to say that. It's two times better on fuel than my truck is. And so that was nice going up Flin Flon.
Which is very important right now, even though gas prices are decreasing. Still stupid expensive to drive anywhere.
Yeah, they're decreasing, but if you told me a year ago this is what they'd be, I'd be like, I'm not looking forward to 189 kind of thing.
Like, no, it's like prices were so high, jacked up so high, that now you are in the mindset, and you know, everyone's in the mindset that we're getting a deal now, and it's not. You know, they jack these prices up and then they lower them a little bit and make you think you're getting a discount, but it's just unbelievable. These are floating too high too long, and yeah, it's putting a damper into a lot of people's travels plans.
Yeah, well, I guess actually, it is a lot of kilometers, but the further north you go, the cheaper the gas has been getting.
Really?
Which I don't understand how that stuff works, but
I don't get that either.
It makes no sense to me, but yeah, literally up in, what was it? I think Saskatoon is cheaper than Moose Jaw. PA was cheaper than Saskatoon. Then you would go to Smeaton, and it was like 170 something. Which isn't even that far from PA. I think it was like probably 7 or 8 cents cheaper in Smeaton. And then you get all the way up to Flin Flon, which is another, whatever you want to call it, three and a half hours north of Smeaton. And the gas is like 180 up there. So it's like, it got cheaper the further we went. If you go all the way to Wautee in the Northwest Territories, when I was up there, the gas was 206 back in Moose Jaw, and in Wautee it was 155, I think.
Does that make sense? They lost me on that one.
Yeah.
But anyways, before we jump into this interview, we have Zach Brown. If you've listened to the podcast, we had him on over a year ago. He was one of our, you know, first few guests, and he had a great episode back then. So if you haven't listened to that, go check that out. he sat down with us again to have another great chat. He's had some crazy things going on. Logan was up there guiding with him. That's where Logan was, up at Lac La Mart. So we figured we'll bring him back on. It's been over a year, and see kind of where he's at with the things at the lodge and the season. And he has some pretty cool stories and topics to touch on as well. But before we jump into that interview, we got to give a huge shout out to our sponsors. They've been fantastic to work with throughout the whole year, and some previously before that. And so yeah, first and foremost, we got to give a shout out to the Saskatchewan Wildlife Federation. They do so much for our province and all of us outdoorsmen, outdoors women that love hunting and fishing. Go check them out, get a membership. Super cheap. There's branches all over the province, and you get so many perks with that membership. Of course, if you haven't, go to your app store and download the Saskatchewan Master Angler Program, now available on all platforms. So go download that, submit your big catches, get rewarded, and yeah
there you go. I actually was trying to get my Master Angler smallmouth and failed miserably, so I will be trying to do that again
on a paddleboard
with a bunch of pike that kept biting me off, and it was just a great time. I was having a lot of fun. And some wind and some rain. I guess leading into that topic, may as well go to blackfish gear. I did not have my blackfish gear with me, and I maybe wish that I had on the paddleboard there when some of the rain came through. But the stuff works great. I can for sure say from experience now, after wearing it for my pretty well every day for my whole experience up in the Northwest Territories, the stuff works. It's durable, whether it's fish slime or water, whatever. It gets dirty, put in the laundry, it was good to go. Washed it just on cold with no detergent, no nothing like that, and it came out looking brand new. So definitely check out our show notes below for a podcast specific discount code and get yourself some really good rain gear.
Yep, 100%. And here's a quick word from our friends over at Lucky Bastard Distillers. If you're looking for any good spirits, vodka, they even have small batch whiskeys, go check them out, luckybastard.ca, and save yourself 10% with the code Weekend Warriors.
There are certain moments in life that really stick with you. This is definitely one of them. The thrill of the dill, my friends, is not a myth. Prohibition is over, Saskatchewan. Ask about LB's legendary Birmingham's Dill Pickle Vodka. After all, it's not a party until someone pulls out the pickle. Tours and tastings available. Call or stop by 814 47th Street East. And tonight, why not mix your Caesar with some Lucky Bastard? It's the one with the pickle in it.
So as Brandon mentioned before that, you can check out the show notes below, get our discount code. They ship Canada wide. It's the season. I know there's lots of drinking that goes on in the winter, but there's nothing better than a nice drink out on the hot deck. Our back deck gets to like 40 degrees Celsius, so it's always nice to have some Lucky Bastard product back there when you're sitting on the back deck. But I guess without further ado, we'll jump right into the episode with Zach Brown. Well, we have another special guest on the pod here. It's his second appearance, I believe second. We've talked about him quite a bit. He's asked a couple questions, but we have Zach Brown on the pod here. How's it going? I haven't talked to you for a little bit.
Yeah, no, things are good. It has been a while. I mean, I used to see your face pretty much every morning, and well, I did every morning, every evening for 30-some days straight, and it's kind of a bit of a nice change, to be totally honest, you know, not having to see
it. Kind of, I thought that was more of a blessing.
No, it was fun. So things have been good.
No, that's good. That's good. Actually, we had talked about, I guess, right before we started recording here, we talked about what we were going to go over, but we have a little admin stuff to go over here that you're texting me about when you listened to last episode, hey?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, no, I went through the air a little bit. I mean, when I listened to your synopsis of the lodge, which is cool. It was nice hearing your perspective and just, I mean, your experience overall from another guide's angle. But I think it was Brandon mentioned when referring to my profile about some, he kind of mentioned it's just like a questionable content, or he just kind of gave, like, it wasn't just like, yeah, check it out. It was like, yeah, you know, he kind of does. And I just wanted to clarify what that was, because it wasn't very super clear and it sounded a little degrading. And I just wanted to clear the air before we start yelling and screaming at each other, but I just didn't know what that entailed. So,
well, let's clear the air. Let's clear the air. I mean,
Brian's put on the spot. He doesn't know what to do.
You know what? There's nothing. No, it's not degrading at all. Like, if anything, I was trying to be optimistic. You know, a lot of your content is different than other people's, which is something that people should be looking for, because it seems like everybody's doing the same thing. Nobody's putting you know, dead squirrels in the water trying to catch 50-inch pike, like mice. You know, I don't even know what else you've done, but I want to see it. I'm not telling you to stop. It's a good thing. I enjoy it. It's interesting. Okay. It's something I would never do. So I'm living through you.
Okay. The way you phrased different before was more of just like, you know, different, right? So there's a little pause. So it wasn't like, it's different. It was like, it's kind of different, right? So I just wanted to clarify. I'm glad we sorted this out because there's a bit of animosity.
Absolutely. I think it's just like bitterness. It's okay. Yeah, no, I think I had something in my throat. That's why there was like a hesitation there. So.
Oh, yeah. That's long COVID, I think. That was long COVID. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So we got that one cleared there. I had another one where I had to fix. I talked to Jesse on the phone for a couple hours. I was telling Zach, and Zach brought it up as well. I said that everyone has hit rocks. Have to point out that Jesse has not hit a rock yet. And he brought that up to me on the phone as well. So I may have just put a jinx on him.
I'd be calling you up too.
Yeah. It's a good title to have.
It's quite a feat when you look and you've been on the lake, you realize in and out of these bays, I mean, and even just going slow, if you've never hit a rock and I mean, a couple of months of being on the water, that's an accomplishment.
Yeah. I think, that was one thing I didn't talk about is when I first flew into the lake there on the 6th and I like have you been in Northern Sask before, Zach, fishing?
I have. Yeah. Yep.
Okay. So like, you know, how it's the shield area, right? When we say rocks, it's actually just, like, it's literally, it's not boulders, it's nothing like that, it's just rock, right? Whereas up at Lamar, it's like, it's actual boulders and stuff like that for the most part that you're seeing. So when I was flying in, I'm looking down, I'm like, how the hell am I supposed to drive around here? Like, I said, I can see rocks everywhere. There's rocks far as the eye can see coming in on the plane. I was like, how am I supposed to kind of go around all this? So yeah, definitely, there's more rocks than anyone needs at that lake, but usually find a couple. I luckily didn't find any of them going fast. I was always worried about that. You always have that feeling in your stomach when you're driving around. So I think most of them I was either in neutral or I was just at an idle looking at, like, kind of sight fishing for pike, be like, oh, it's a little skinny here, and then little knock, you're like, okay.
It's important, right? You need to be able to sharpen the prop, right? So I think people always try to avoid it, but if you can just lightly just sharpen it, and then when you go through those weeds later in the season, you got a sharp prop ready to cut those down. So
exactly.
It's important to just lightly hit rocks.
Yeah, especially after you've hit a couple, you want to kind of bend that back, gain those miles per hour back. I know the first one I hit, I did gain a mile per hour, so but I think that was it for house cleaning things here for the most part. And the exact quote of Brandon was, he texts, also Brandon's in quotations, not everyone is into with regards to my Instagram content, but
I don't think that's what I said.
No, we were talking about that. We just wanted to grind your gears.
Right. I mean, when you think about it, it's obviously not everybody is into it, right? But I think a lot of people are, but I mean, he's not wrong.
Yeah. Well, I guess if there anyone listening that isn't following you, they can find you at Fecal Fishing Guide. It's kind of it's daily stuff, right? When, I guess for anyone wondering, Zach's able to talk right now because it's kind of your, 10 days off?
Yeah, we got 10 days with no clients in, so we're just kind of taking it easy. But yeah, no, typically I have stuff going on each day, and I'm sometimes trying to take stuff in videos and pictures, and then later in the day when I'm back in the lodge, try to upload it and try to just keep people in the loop of what's going on as far as the kind of fishing and what we're fishing for, how many fish we caught, and what was hot that day. And I think people look forward to that, right? Because it's every day. I mean, and it can be every day there's giant fish, and then you get to realize, oh, some days are slow. Great. Not every day is phenomenal, but.
Well, exactly. And you guys, you've been showing that clicker, I think, pretty well every day. And yeah, some days are 150 fish and other ones are like, oh, there's only say 30 today, but 8 or 9 were over 40, kind of thing like that. Right. So
correct.
You get to see both sides of it. It's, I guess, a question. Sometimes you want more quantity over quality or quality over quantity, right? So
that's what I was gonna say. I look forward to your stories with the clickers.
That's funny. Yeah, no, this year I usually don't, because I think it can be an unrealistic expectation for people that like come up and they're like, oh man, we saw last week, and they realize, and the people that do realize that it's not a reality, that's just a fishing thing, right? Where yes, you can have it hot, yes, you can have it cold. But I kind of just steered away from that. And this year I was like, screw it. You know, it is what it is. I mean, some days are awesome. Some days are slow, and clients can come up and be like, oh wow, like it wasn't like what you had posted or something. Right. But that's just fishing. Right. I mean, yeah. It is what it is. And yeah, you get to see the highs and lows.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. No, I was just going to say that. I think that that thing alone has got a lot of interest because I think people just don't realize. And I think Logan realizes because he's here, but just how many fish there are. Right. So it's not uncommon to get 75 fish a day, and people are like, oh, that's insane. And I'm like, well, that I wouldn't say it's average, but it's not something to go crazy over. So I think that's the amount of people that have replied just being like, really, there's that many fish in the lake. It's like, yeah, there's that many fish in the lake.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is unbelievable. Yeah.
No, I had for anyone that was following me while I was up there, like I had the story the one day of where the water's so clear, but there's like 45 pike, not many. I think there's one or two 40s in it. The rest were all a bit smaller ones, but literally recording that coming out of a bay and they're all swimming out of the bay with me. And it's like, you don't really see that anywhere else.
No, it's a pretty special place.
Yeah. And I guess I did find one more kind of admin thing here. I don't know if I told you, but I sent Deb, one of my first clients up there, I sent her an email with the pictures and whatnot. And she replied back to me, letting me know that she listened to the episode before I went up there. And then the one when we got back, and she says, she's listening to it. And I think I was talking about like the average age or whatever of the clients, right? Cause most people, like lots of places you come up here, it's more of that like younger age group. And so, she said, listen to the podcast posted before you left and also from the one you return. And then she said, I just have one complaint. Not all your customers were 70. I'm only 68. So I wanted to point that out. Yeah. I thought that was pretty funny, but
big difference.
Oh, it is. Yeah. And it's definitely something that's different. Like when you go up to lots of the lakes and like Northern Sask and stuff, most of the drive-in ones, your age groups are from kids all the way up to, obviously you can go all the way up, but it's a lot younger average. So from what I had seen before, that's kind of more of what I was expecting until we got up there and we were working and kind of talking about, oh, what are the clients like? And most guys are saying usually they are in that like 60 plus. So I think that was something different, right? Because that's quite the difference between our age and the clients, right? Like some, I think I had three guys that had something to do with Vietnam and stuff. And it's like, that's so different than anything we can even try and relate to here, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's just a difference when it comes to like local fishing, right? Like the average person that's younger can afford and have the time to go out for a weekend here or there. And then you say these kinds of trips where you need 6 days off, it's an expensive trip and you need the time. So that usually qualifies somebody that's a little bit older. And usually that's why you have those 60 plus, because they're the ones that have time, money, and still have the interest in fishing.
Yeah, for sure. So I guess I think we should get into it. I guess first order of business, kind of how's that first? This is kind of the midway point of the season, right?
Yeah. So typically, I mean, we're pretty busy. I mean, we run from June 14th onwards till September 6th. And what we've realized over the seasons is just that, I mean, with people being on the water for 10 to 12 hours a day, sun went down here. 10, 12 hours a day, you mean people get a little bit burned out. So it's nice to have a little bit of downtime. So we kind of allow for people to go home during this time of the season. And typically it's not a large booking time, so it's not a huge inconvenience to not be open running. And then people go away, they come back, and then early August we pick up into the lake trout spawn. And then we finish hard the last 6 weeks of the season, which is really busy. Usually we have 18 guests as well. So it's kind of nice to give guys a bit of a break. But yeah, I mean, this midpoint, it's funny because, I mean, I definitely don't think the fishing's any slower. The lake trout are stacking up. I mean, the pike fishing, we did some pike fishing today and it was consistent. I mean, any of those cabbage patches have a lot of fish, but yeah, I mean, it's a long season. It's definitely important to have a break. And when you realize that you're doing this inside and out, day in and day out, it's good to get time off the water. And sometimes it's just good to get away from the lodge and get away from the routine. Go back home, see friends and family, and then come back and finish strong. We get people sometimes go a little bit cabin crazy. You mean, you know, you start seeing maybe a little bit more whining going on as the season progresses. And, I mean, I get it, right? We're living with each other, and sometimes you got to live with people like Logan for weeks on end, and it is nice to get away.
Yeah. Yeah, you're stuck in the grain bin with me.
Stuck in the grain bin.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's that's a place I learned to love. I slept so bad the first couple nights back home, not being in the grain bin. Like, honestly, like, I was I wasn't rested when I woke up. I tossed and turned. I was like, I need to be back in the grain bin in my sleeping bag.
And also being out in the sun for 12 hours a day, right? No matter where you are, you go back home and you're just like, I'm done, right? Not like any other jobs back home usually.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and you said there, when you're talking about the going on and whatnot, you said the sun went down there. I have to call your bluff there, because that never happens.
The sun never goes down.
You're right. Sorry, the sun, the clouds, sun dip behind the clouds, not the horizon.
Yeah, but I guess how's that, like, obviously this is my first time up there, so I don't have anything to compare it to, but I guess fishing-wise and client-wise and stuff like that, how was the first half of the season there?
Well, I think it's nice when, I think people are much more appreciative of things. I mean, people are waiting to come up here with COVID, right? They had their trip delayed 2 years. I mean, they're sitting at home pacing. They're not traveling anywhere else. And some of these guys, maybe a once a year kind of trip, or once in every couple of years. So when we say, hey, we're open, and as soon as they come off the plane, they're just happy to be here. I definitely felt that people's expectations were lower. And what I mean by that was just, I mean, you don't have this intensity of like, I got to get a big fish, and just this overly competitiveness, so to speak. It was just like, people were just happy to be here. They're happy to have the shore lunches. They're happy to see everybody. They're happy to be on the boat. They're just more appreciative, because they just realized that, you know, you maybe took it for granted. They come here year after year, and they weren't able to come here for a couple of years, and they're finally here, and they're just super happy. I definitely noticed that. I think even with the fishing, I mean, these bays haven't been fished in years, and I mean, it's a huge lake and there's not a lot of pressure, but I still do think that I think the fishing was better than normal, just because it did help a little bit. As far as smoothness, I mean, I think it was awesome. I mean, sometimes there's kinks to iron out, but I think as far as operations go, we did really well. It was a bit painstaking to try to find a cook even. I mean, a lot of people that we had before, whether it was guides or whatever, through COVID got their own job and back to the trades, went back to something. So to be able to kind of, you know, hustle together a bunch of new people and then have a success on top of that is a big hurrah kind of thing. So overall, I mean, it turned out really well. And I think a lot of the end of the day, it's what the clients think, right? I could be disappointed, or somebody else could be disappointed, but as long as the clients are happy and we have a lot of people rebook and come back next year and, you know, just pumped about it all. So that's what it's all about. When you see that and you see people, you know, just happy with their guide and happy with the food and happy with the fishing. I mean, that's what it's all about. We got a lot of that this year. So it was good to see.
Yeah. No, that's good. I think, when you say expectations aren't as high, I think too, is kind of, they're just happy to be there, right? It's not just another trip to them of, oh, it's, we're here again. It's, we're finally up here again. And they've been building up these ideas in their head of, oh, remember we did this or that like a couple of years ago, and they just want to get back there, right?
Yeah, I mean, they wait a whole year.
Yeah, exactly. And then make the whole flight up there, like, that's not short either. I mean, I guess you do the drive, so you can't compare that to the flight, but
we actually just had talk about long flights. We just had a guy come up the last week before we closed down, and he was from Australia, and he had booked in 2020. Oh. And, 2020, and then that didn't happen. Then 21 didn't happen. So this year he came here, and it was like 2.5 days of travel. And this is like, he was 81 years old. So pretty old. I mean, the fact that he's traveling is a big deal. And the fact that he's from Australia is even a bigger deal, but just the nicest down earth guy. And he complained about travel quite a bit. But he had quite the personality and got along with a lot of people, and, you know, your typical Australian accent with Australian sayings and slangs and cuss words. But I think he might actually come back, which is super cool. And the fact that he's even considering it is even cooler. But yeah, I mean, that's a travel.
That's unbelievable. That's
a travel. Two and a half days, I think he said. So yeah, it's people travel a lot to get here.
He just came by himself, or him and his wife, or just him?
He came by himself. His wife had found the place online and basically booked it for him. And he was quick to say, I mean, my wife basically sent me here. But he was, he was pretty awesome. So he's hoping to come back. And actually the first week, August 1st, we have a group from Poland coming. So five guys are coming from Poland. So yeah, I mean, people like their fishing. I mean, traveling doesn't seem like a huge deal for them, as long as they, there's big fish on the other end of the plains.
Yeah.
That's actually, that's a long ways. You hear about people traveling over to Europe or Australia. Like I went to Australia, you know, whatever it was, 5 years ago. And, you know, me being young, like it was exhausting. So like for an 80 some year old man to fly from Australia by himself for this trip, that's like, that's impressive.
Yeah. It is. Yeah. Yeah. He was full of piss and vinegar. That's for sure.
Yeah. Well, then he does the 2.5 days of travel. And then what he's met with is a float plane ride that morning, and he's fishing an hour and a half after he gets off the plane until 6:30 that night or whatever. So there's no breaks for him there.
No.
Piggybacking off of Logan's topic of, you know, how the first half of the season's going and whatnot, any like really memorable moments that come to mind right away for you from this first half of the season? I can think of one that we're probably going to dive into, but other than that one that I think you know I'm talking about, is there anything memorable that just jumps out to you?
I had a bunch of pike T-bone this year, which is more uncommon than normal. Which is really cool. Actually, two happened at one specific spot. It was just a reed area, and it always seemed like whenever you caught a little fish, the big fish would come in. And we got to experience that twice, and once I got to net it. And I don't know, like, T-bones are just so, so cool. You mean when you get to see a fish, just that the emotion and the action of the fish when it's just getting ready to hit, you don't see that a lot. So when you see a pike do something, you see pike all day, and when you see them do something they don't normally do, it's exciting. And we had one T-bone one, and then we got to net it. And that's just cool to see, because maybe you see once a year, and we saw it three times already. There's also a cool time where there was a storm bite, and we were in camp. It was before clients were here, and I was with the wife, and we could see the storm was coming. And I was like, man, this is like a pre-storm bite. It was kind of like a little bit of sarcasm. We whipped into the back, and we had a pike T-bone. The fish we were hitting, we hooked, and then it just was just lights off every cast. And there was some decent-sized fish. And then, like, the storm hit, but that spot usually isn't turned on. But to see it when it was just the storm was coming in was a pretty cool experience. No, I don't know. I mean, I think it was just all in all, it was definitely from, I go back to, I mean, fishing was really good. I mean, we had a lot of fish over 40 inches this year. We've been paying more interest to that. And I think this is definitely our best year for trout over 40 inches in the first few weeks. Typically, it's slower just because they're so spread out. But this year, if you were to compare to most years, I think we did quite well. And I think Logan ended up getting a bunch of those as well, which was sweet. But yeah, you don't see that as often. So that was definitely a highlight when you see every boat, you know, boating some big fish.
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely getting on those trout was pretty cool. And that first week there with Deb and Mike, that one was my best week for sure. I think Mike alone had 5 40-inch trout. And I was like, this is ridiculous. Yeah. Especially for the first week.
Because you're an unbelievable guy, Logan.
Yeah, no, yeah.
Dude, I just know where to drive. I don't think I've gotten 5 total this year. I've gotten 1, 2, maybe 4, maybe 5, much less in a week. So, what does that say?
I guess I just know the lake better. I don't know. No, I was actually very lucky with Deb and Mike because they were down to do whatever, and we got both of their... I think the first day we had 5 40-inch pike in like 45 minutes to end the day. So they had their 40-inch pike crossed off already, right? And Mike got a 40-inch trout that first day too. But then I know Deb wanted to get hers. And so they were willing to like trout fish to like 1 or something like that. And then we'd go and pike fish for maybe from 1 till like 4 kind of thing. And then stop on the way back. And that's where 2 more 40s came from. We're trolling trout at like 4 till 5 kind of thing. So... then you don't get that with a lot of the guests, right? Usually it's pike fishing till you got to run home.
Yeah. And there's something to say about that. I think is people like when you get set into a schedule and these people that are just like, yeah, whatever, you know, happy go lucky. It seems like with those guests that they just do better because I think they're not set in their own ways and they're really open to change and open to what the guide suggests. And usually the guide knows best. And yeah, it's cool when you see them get rewarded.
Yeah. Yeah. So got to put a lot of time in there. And I guess when you were mentioning the T-bone thing, I know you were telling me when I was up there, how those little ones will start, they'll break the surface, right? And pretty well jump out. And that's how you know it's about to happen.
Yeah. They porpoise. I mean, it's not even like a jump out. It's like they do a clean, like hopping almost, and they don't make a splash. They like, it's a really clean break. And then they dive back down. And I think it's just a way to just, I mean, confuse the fish that it's chasing. and it's a very specific way. And when you see it, you know right away, okay, well, this fish is, it may not be the one that's hooked, maybe the one that's in the bay or in the reed, but that fish is clearly getting hunted by another fish.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. But I guess what Brandon was alluding to, if anyone, well, I guess really I shared it, we shared it on the page. Some of the other guides shared it, but your 50-inch silver pike.
Yeah, that was incredible. So we had this last week before we closed up, we had Ryan Kohler from Wild TV, and I know him from a lot of the hunting I do in the Bow Zone near Edmonton area. And he had talked about coming up here and doing some fishing, and we got partnered with NWT Tourism to come up and just bring more awareness to the Northwest Territories for fishing. And didn't think much of it. It was pretty close to camp, and we were just kind of, we started off a little later in the day. We rolled into this bay, and he was at the front of the boat, and he just said, whoa, big fishes were coming in. And I'm always a bit leery when a client says big fishes, because it's typically not a big fish, because people usually don't know what a big fish looks like. It's just partly because, I mean, it's new to them. And I could see where he was looking at, and I was standing on the bench, and I could see this looked like a clear fish. I mean, I knew right away it was a silver, and it was just kind of swimming away. And a big indication of a pretty big fish typically is when you have the fins that are just really like just sticking out, like they just seem overly big, and it's usually because it's attached to it, an overly big fish. And he was trying to throw the fly on it, and a little fish came up and hit his fly. And usually when that happens in that scenario, you have the big fish that'll take off because the little fish is flopping around and just spooks them. So usually when that happens, it's not quite a write-off, but it's your odds go down significantly. And there's another guy in the boat, and he had hooked up with another fish, and I'm trying to pay attention to where I think this fish had gone away, the big fish. And we got his fish off, all the little ones, and we're working our way out, and I see it, and he casts out again, and it was a good cast. I mean, he's working with the fly, and usually when you have a fly on a big fish, I mean, that's your best chance, because these big fish could come in, they have a white fish in their belly, they don't want to hit a big spoon or a bondi or a big swim bait, they've already eaten, so they're just wanting a small meal. So if you have that fly presentation, that's your best shot. And he's working the fly, and it didn't really seem to do much. And I was kind of one of those points where, I mean, the fly has gone within this fish's face probably about three times, and I haven't seen any reaction. And I think we were drifting out, and I was kind of knew where the fish was, and I was watching, and the fish kind of just kind of came down on an angle and just kind of nosed it. And when that happens, you mean, if you ice fish at all and you get to watch it on camera, typically they nose down and then they just hammer it. This nose down, then just kind of backed off and kept swimming. And I was like, whoa, that's a really good sign. The fish is obviously still interested in the fly, or finally is interested now. So kind of took off a little bit, and we got a good situation out on good boat positioning, and he cast it out in front of it. And I always say, you mean go 5 feet out in front of it and kind of bring it by it. And what I mean by it is kind of in front of its nose, and make it easy for the fish to come on it. So if the fish has to do a full 180, that's usually a bad positioning, because if a big fish is eaten, it doesn't want to work for its meal. You get to kind of know how these fish act and how they're looking, and it's just that fish is lethargic. It needs to be right in front of them. Maybe he'll eat it. This fish, though, actually did a full 180 and came back of the boat, and I came up to the front of the boat with him, and I could see this fish was coming. I said, dude, he's coming. Just strip, 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 and he kind of did a full speed strip. And this fish just inhaled it. And it was one of the worst takes when the fish is swimming at you with a fly. You typically have to set it straight up. If you don't set it straight up and just shred it, do a strip set, you'll pull it right out of its mouth. So he was able to strip set and then set it as well. And then the fish took off. And I thought right away, I mean, it was a 45-inch. I mean, it was a good fish. And then when we came close to the boat, I realized, I mean, this fish is really big. And the cool thing is, because Ryan films for TV, we had a bunch of cameras rolling. So we got a lot of different angles and a lot of different emotions going on in the boat. And it comes to the boat, takes another run. And I'm like, man, I mean, this fish seems really big, but I just don't know. And then anyway, we net it, and I'm looking over at it, and I'm like, this is big. Like, I'm trying to look. And I think I said it on camera before I even measured it. I said, man, we actually caught a really big silver in here in 2018. I said, I'm curious if this is it. So we lifted up to measure, and I know right, like the head on this fish was probably one of the biggest heads I've seen, just because it was an old fish. Like, you can't, it's over, I don't know, not a foot, but it's 10 inches, 9 inches. I mean, it's so long from where the gills start to where the nose is. And I measured it on the bump board, and I saw 46 right away. So I thought, oh, it's a 46-inch fish, but that was actually 49. it wasn't a six. You know, I'm dyslexic. That's what I attributed to. And I was like, pinching. I was like, dude, it's a 50 inch silver. And then we just started acting like little school kids, and then put it back in the net. And throughout the video, I'm sure it'll get put on TV or put on YouTube or something. But big thing with these big fish is you want to get in the net. And I mean, when you're dealing with TV or camera and everybody wants a video, wants this, and I'm like, no, like, we're doing this quick. We got to, you know, take it up for a picture, put it back in the net for 15 minutes, whatever we got to do, but we can't be having it out of water for a long time. We got some good footage of it, and then we let it go. It took a while to revive it just because we were definitely, with him fighting it on the fly. He wasn't, he was playing it safe, and in doing that, she takes a lot of runs. So lactic acid builds up. So anyway, we coaxed her back and she took off, and yeah, we were pretty pumped. And he was just like, well, I can basically, you know, quit pike fishing. And I was like, dude, like, I mean, if you pike fish all your life and, to get a 50 inch fish is huge. And a lot of people don't even know what a silver pike is because it's not a common fish. And up here we have so many of them. And when someone catches one, they're like, man, I've pike fished for 25 years and I just caught my first silver. So that's a big step in itself. So when you're able to throw on a 50 inch mark to that, I mean, that's incredible. And we actually were doing some other research, and make it sound like we researched. But anyway, I was looking at old pictures, and we actually had caught this fish three times. So this fish was caught in 2018 twice, once July 24th, and then once August 22nd, and then now in 2022. So, I mean, if you take care of these fish, I mean, we talk about catch and release. I mean, it's huge, right? Because you can enjoy them, and somebody else can catch it, and it can keep living and grow to 50 inches, right? So, yeah, it was a really cool story. I mean, that's, I don't know if I'll ever top that. I mean, I've been grateful enough to catch a 50-inch fish before, not a silver, a lot of 49s. So to be able to do that is pretty special.
Yeah, no, that's pretty crazy to think about. Like, I think the biggest fish I saw up there was, or in my boat when I was guiding, was 44 and a half, maybe 45, and it's like, mm-hmm. That fish is huge, right? And then I mean, there was one that I believe is in 9 Mile. A couple of us guys had seen it, but that fish, I don't know how big that fish would have been. It's the biggest one I've ever seen, but it's kind of funny how you mentioned, like, sometimes the guests aren't as sure, or if it's a big fish, you're kind of like, okay, like, I want to get a look at it, because there is so many big fish up there. It is hard to tell. Like, I even found my eyes being tricked, and be like, oh, it might be 40, and then you put it on the board and it's like a 42, and you're like, it didn't look like that at all, because there is so many that you see, right? So it's pretty crazy to think. But no one's here is going to really be able to relate, but where on the lake was that, or is it one of your secret spots?
It's one of the secret spots. No, I think it was funny because Adam Gamble, another guide up there, he messaged me after, and he's like, hey, was that in Godberry Cut? And I was like, no, I can't remember. You mean, it was a blur. I don't remember, but he was right. It was definitely, where he thought it was, because it's, I think, unmistakable. I don't think there's a lot of 50 inch fish swimming around that are silver. So when you see one, you're like, well, that's a really big silver. So it's interesting that he saw it. So I wasn't very far from camp, just up in a channel, not far from here.
No. Well, I'd never even heard of that spot while I was up there. So somewhat secret.
Well, there's names that get put on with new guys.
They're keeping it from the rookies.
I think you had fished there. It was just on the way to Stick Bay, that first channel. Instead of going all the way around, you would just cut through that one channel. It's really, really shallow on the way through. But that turns into some weeds. And I think that's what I was never called Cloudberry Cut until this year. I thought before we just called it a John Boy Channel or something. I don't know.
Oh, right, because that's the Cloudberry Islands there. Okay, that makes...
Correct.
That makes sense. Correct. Yeah. Yeah, my first day driving the boat, Colby, who's up there with you still at the lodge, he was in the boat with me in the front. Colby's sitting in there, and so I explained in the previous episode the different, like, changing colors of the water, right, for kind of what you want to watch out for. We're going into there, and Colby's like, yeah, I'll let you know if you need to slow down or whatever, and I'm like... We're getting pretty like blondy here. And then I was like, we're getting pretty blonde mixed with orange here, like, kind of thing. And I'm still going. And Colby's just like points a little bit one way or the other way. And that's where we were ripping through, was there. And I was like, I do not enjoy this. Like, this better not be how I have to drive everywhere. But thankfully it wasn't. But yeah, so I know what you're talking about there. But I was curious because on, I think the last second last day with the last set of clients. We were in some of the Southwest Islands there. And I had a silver in there. It would like charge at it. And then last second just stop, like for all the different baits we threw at it. But it looked like it was probably in that like 45 plus area. Not like, really? Not as big as the one I saw in 9 Mile that, Davis and JR have seen as well. But, I was wondering if it was maybe somewhere around there. I didn't think it was in that 47, 48, but there was a big silver there and it just would not touch anything. It would charge up to it and stop. And I even tried throwing some of my stuff at it just to hand it off. And I was like, yeah, it doesn't seem to want it, but no, that's mm-hmm. pretty sweet. And I think, I don't know if there is really even silver pike. You don't see anything like that down here, right?
Well, a 50 inch pike is pretty rare, but then a 50 inch silver is like far few and in between. But like, I haven't seen any other silver. I don't know how common it is for you guys to even come across silvers up there, but
it's common enough, I thought.
Yeah, I'd say every boat sees them. Yeah, not every day, yeah. But I'd say in a week of fishing, you either see them, you catch them, or you see them in the water. We've eaten them for shore lunch that many, so it's not really it's a lot.
Yeah. It's not really a unicorn thing.
No, for sure.
Well, anywhere else, I feel like it would be potentially, but I think up here, you just get spoiled by it, right?
Yeah. Well, and I guess you had that one also that you uploaded that was the opposite, right? It was so dark. Was that one blind or something?
Yeah, that one I think was blind as well, but it just had a cool stripe pattern. You mean it was a darker at the one end of the lake? It's just a darker colored water, so I definitely noticed the trout and the pike on average are a little bit darker, and then it also just happened to have a brighter spot pattern on top of a darker body, so it really stuck out. But yeah, and then it had a blind eye on top of it, and when I saw it, like I caught it, I was like, oh, we got to take a picture of that. Like, I mean, people were like, oh, it's small fish. I'm like, yeah, but that pattern, I've never seen that before. It was cool. Kind of reminded me of like a European fish or something.
Yeah, and that's the thing I like up there is when you are guiding and you are using stuff every day and catching fish every day, you can really start to notice patterns or notice things about fish. And it's, you don't notice that when you're fishing once or twice a week, right? Yeah. Or once every other week. Yeah. Like you forget about things, you go on and do other things. But up there, like getting to use your gear every day and stuff like that, and just seeing how it really works when it's actually put to the test instead of being used once a week for the summer kind of thing. So I definitely like that, but I guess that kind of transitions into some new stuff. Like, is there any new baits or stuff you've been trying out this year that you've noticed have been working?
Actually, just today we were speaking of, I guess you guys deal with Rapala and 13 Fishing, and I guess I deal with them too, but I've never really dealt a lot with Rapala, or just because, I mean, I guess you don't need to. I mean, you could use one lure all season and do well. But we were ripping some Super Shads today and some, what was the other one? An Otis. And I was noticing just how we caught some really nice fish. And I mean, I'm always hesitant when somebody says, this is the lure, because, I mean, you realize that you could probably use anything. But we were doing quite well on them, and I haven't really thrown them ever. So that was cool to see. But no, nothing out of the ordinary, right? With the Savage Gear stuff, that works pretty well. And that Z-Man stuff is incredible with how the soft plastics work and they just don't break off. And you can have a client almost use one all week. And that's a real nice thing because they're used to, you know, little storm grubs or whatever, just breaking off after every other fish or every couple fish, to have some that doesn't break. But no, nothing too crazy, right? I use a lot of Bondi baits, obviously. And the Savage Gear stuff works good. And yeah, spoons, being mute. It's always interesting because you bring up a tackle, and I think it was interesting talking to you because you were bringing up, like, hey, what should I bring? Should I bring this? Should I bring that? And I mean, you bring up, you know, tackle trays, and then you end up using two or three lures, and those are the ones you use all week, and they're your bread and butter.
Yeah. Yeah, that was me. I brought four trays and my fly box, and I didn't even line up my fly rods. And I probably, the things I used the most were whatever was being used for lake trout, really. Otherwise, it was just I just used like the search bait, the 360. Yeah. Just used that mostly for pike. And yeah, that is the biggest thing, I think, with those things, is it's like the body of the bait seems to do pretty well. It's just that tail can get bitten off. And then it's like you just lost all action on that thing, right? So definitely brought up a lot of those. And then I guess on my follow rod was just the VMC underspin with the churro on it, and that's all I had. I know some guys use like some bigger bondies and stuff and whatnot, but I just had I think it was like a 6.6 medium heavy, so it wasn't any up there. That's just like a wet noodle with some of those baits on it. So it worked out well to use that. But actually, I haven't told you this yet, and I don't know if I've told Brandon either, but when you're talking about using the swim baits and stuff, so when I went to the airport when I was leaving, I got there and the WestJet thing wasn't open yet, and so I had my two check bags and my rod tube and my two carry-ons, and I noticed out of the corner of my eye that this father and son kept looking at me, and they're in the Air Canada line, and I was like, whatever, I'm gonna go sit in front of security there and kind of wait for things to open up and check in. And as I'm walking by, they kind of get my attention, like, were you up here fishing? And I was like, oh, I was just guiding for the month but heading home now, kind of thing. And they're like, oh, well, Air Canada didn't send any of our tackle, would we be able to buy some tackle off you? And I was like, I'm not very good at saying no, but it's with the tackle, right? Lots of it's stuff, some of it's stuff like I gotten from my dad or whatnot. You don't want to sell that stuff, yeah, right? And then other things are like, yeah, and you're building up that, I guess if you want to call it a collection, like you kind of got things the way you want it, right? And I didn't want to sell like Savage Gear stuff or whatever, stuff like that, but I was like, I'll take a look and see what I got here. And so I opened up, and the first one I opened up was all my lake trout stuff, which had the VMC underspins and the churros. So I'm like, whatever, I like using the discount to get these and stuff, right? So I may as well, here you go, kind of thing. And so I gave them, I don't know how many of the underspins, the 1 ounce underspins, and then a bag of like, I think I had like five packs of the Smoke and Mirror churros in there that I took up and gave those all to them. And I was just like, kind of thinking, after all, I didn't maybe have to give them all those, because now I got to replenish that, but whatever. I was like, oh, here you go, we got this podcast, kind of thing like that, check that out. And like, oh, thanks. But then I also had any of the clients that were using the Z-Mans, they would like, it would come off. It was nothing wrong with it. It just slid off the hook, and I'd be like, oh, this one's done. I'd be like, oh, I'll take that, I'll put that in the garbage. I just put it in a Ziploc bag because it was still perfectly fine. And I was like, but you couldn't convince them that it was. So I was like, whatever. So I think I had like four Z-Mans in a little Ziploc, and gave them that as well, because I didn't know where I was going to use those Magnum Z-Mans down here. So I gave that to them. Anyways, like 2 weeks later, I get a message on Instagram, and it's the son, and he sends me all these pictures. I can't remember what lake they went to, but he says, yeah, his dad, he said trophies. I don't know what trophies were for them, but he was talking in that 40-inch range. So he said on like the underspin with the churro, they caught, his dad caught like six trophies in one day on it or something. And then he said he used one Z-Man for 350 fish. He had a picture of it in the one pike's mouth. And it was just,
oh my God.
It was beat as could be. It was a Z-Man on the 360 head. I must've gave him one of those. And so, yeah, they used, that's all they used was the underspins, I think. And they maybe got some spoons. I think they're flying out like 2 hours later, but so yeah, they use that stuff and they did quite well. So it's kind of funny when you mentioned this.
That's a pretty cool story.
Yeah. No, it was, I was happy with it. Yeah.
Yeah. No, you didn't mention that to me. That's quite the scenario there. I mean, obviously they got the right guy in the line.
Yeah.
'Cause I don't know how many other people would just dish off some of their tackle and arsenal. But, yeah, well, yeah. Exactly.
Well, that's what he's trying to kind of sell the idea to me. He's like, oh, yeah, take some weight out of your luggage. And I'm like, I have this, when I was packing the night before, I was like, I have this to a T. Like, I am like a quarter of a pound away from 50 pounds for both of these. Like, this is set up perfectly. So I would have been fine anyway.
This is science.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's, that was the funny part. Luckily, they weren't too curious about the two bigger boxes with all the Savage gear. Because then I would have been charging for sure, because that would have been a bit more expensive. But no, it was good. And yeah, had a bit more of a conversation with him on Instagram after that, and he sent some more pictures and stuff. But yeah, it was, I think they had to fly out like 2 hours after they got into the airport, so they couldn't really, like, they could have maybe gone to the Canadian Tire in time and gotten some stuff there, but it would have been close. So I was like, well, that would suck. But I mean, there was like probably like one or two people, it sounded like, had something go missing, or everyone had a story about some luggage not showing up when they got there.
Missing rods.
Yeah, I know a guy who had missing rods. Yeah, no, exactly. So I think, I mean, they definitely work. And like you said, it's, you go up there with all your idea of how it is nice, because you can use whatever right? So you can catch on baits that you don't normally use. Like the last day, I had a solo in my boat for the last day, and so I was holding, I had a rod, he had a rod, and I just switched the hook or the lure every single time I caught a fish. I think you had mentioned that, maybe it was right before I got up there or whatnot, but you said just try other things, and I was like, I know it's the last day, but may as well try. And I think I used 6 different lures, and I was like, they all caught fish, so it was kind of nice to get to use it, because how many things do we buy and then you never use, or you don't catch a fish on it, right? Yeah, just sit in the tackle box.
If you are in need of a boat, whether it be a pontoon, fishing boat, maybe you just need a small boat to get into the backwoods, a river system, check out our friends JP Adventure Rentals and SAS Best Boat Rentals. They have everything you need for all of your adventures, whether it be fishing or fun with the family.
Be sure to mention that you're a Weekend Warriors listener for 10% off everything, including gift cards.
Here's a quick word from JP Adventure Rentals.
Get your adventure on with JP Adventure Rentals in Saskatchewan. Whether it's remote ice fishing, hunting, trail riding, or just taking family and friends out for a day of fun, JP Adventure Rentals has you covered with brand new ATVs, snowmobiles, aluminum trailers, plus accessories. Visit jpadventurerentals.ca to make your reservation. Check out our sister company, Saskatchewan's Best Boat Rentals, for all of your boat rental needs. Pre-book now. Get out there with JP Adventure Rentals. We rent fun.
I feel like that's with any trip, right? You always overpack or you take things and you never use it, and you always end up just using one or two things, and then you pay for all the extra luggage and whatnot. But yeah, I mean, the fact that they found you on Instagram and messaged you and sent some photos of their fish, I guess that's kind of could lead into a topic I know Zach is pretty passionate about, is, you know, holding fish for like pictures and whatnot. Zach, I know we kind of touched on this a little bit before the recording, but let's talk on like handling fish.
Lake trout specific.
Yeah, I mean, I think
lake trout specific.
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, I think up here, you mean, the biggest thing is that people aren't, you know, when they catch a giant fish, they're letting that fish go. So I think that obviously the idea is to get a nice picture, you know, in memory of this fish. And there's a lot of different ways to take a picture. And you obviously want to be able to showcase the fish in a way that does it justice, right? There's nothing more disappointing than if you were to catch a 25 or 35 pound lake trout and you look back at the photo and maybe your hand was in front of one thing or your hand was on the other side of the gill and, you know, ripping up the one side. But yeah, you want to take a nice picture. And then obviously the concern there is, well, when you're taking a fish picture, you're in theory taking the fish out of the water. And obviously, as soon as you do that, you're, you know, bringing a fish into possible death. So the idea is to keep it out of the water for as short amount of time as possible. But even when you are holding it, it obviously is important to how you're holding it. And there's a lot of different opinions on holding fish. And obviously with lake trout, people have voiced concerns when it comes to the gills. With a lake trout, in comparison to a pike, their gills are a lot more sensitive. And the thought process when it comes to lake trout is that when your hands go into the gills, I mean, it could potentially kill them. Some people would argue that as soon as your hands get anywhere near them or touch them or graze them, that fish is dead. Long story short, I mean, I think it comes down to, you know, not dropping the fish, I think, is number one. If you drop a fish on the boat, regardless of how you're holding it, I mean, that's a large, change in that fish's life in equilibrium. I mean, fish don't usually get dropped. They're swimming in an ocean of water. And when you drop a fish, I mean, that could potentially kill them instantly. Or, you mean, it may damage them. So when they do swim off, they die. But yeah, I mean, I think when it comes to lake trout specifically, I definitely have been doing it more so where you have a hand on the tail and then a hand outside the gills. But I don't think it's as damaging as people might say, because if you were to not keep your hand inside the gills, yet rub their fish slime all over you and have them out of the water for, you know, 45 seconds or something, well, that doesn't do it very good, even though you might justify it by saying, oh, my hand didn't touch the gills. But I don't know. It's one of those things where, you mean, you kind of have to take a step back and realize, I mean, we're taking a hook and we're shoving it into a fish's mouth where they breathe and lungs essentially, and potentially could kill them. And then we're going to get very, very nitpicky over how we hold them. That being said, I don't think it discredits, taking the time and doing it carefully. Even with, there's the discussion with letting clients hold fish. And I'm very clear where if I have somebody in my boat that I don't feel comfortable them holding a fish where maybe they aren't strong enough. A lot of our clients are older. The potential to drop fish is very real. So if I notice that where, I always try to get them to holding a smaller fish and then a little bit medium fish. So when I do have a bigger fish, they're able to hold it and hold it well. But it's just one of those things where, you definitely have to pay attention to. And if you can do anything to keep these fish alive longer, that's the way to go, especially when you realize that, like that big silver pike, we were able to catch that 3 different times, right? So that's a long time of a lot of different scenarios with that fish being held, being put back in the water, and then swimming away. But yeah, ideally holding a lake trout, you want your hand on the tail, pinched it pretty tight, and then the other hand supporting the belly. The biggest thing I think is keeping the fish flat is number one. Obviously fish vertical, that's just not a common state for these fish to be in. They're not, they don't swim around like that. That's not how they are. So I always right away keep the fish horizontal and have the gills if you can. If the hand is in the gills, obviously the gill plate is where your hand goes. Your hand should never technically be in the gills, especially with a pike because your hands will get destroyed. But yeah, at the end of the day, keep the fish out of the water. I try to do 15, 30 seconds. And then put it back as soon as you can.
Yeah, no, that's the thing that's nice about up there is those huge nets, with how much room they have. Like you can net that fish. Especially when it was bigger ones and the pike in the shallower bays, kind of let them chill out a bit, depending what they're doing, try and get that hook out. And then, I think I'd heard it once before. It's like, it's kind of like if you just say around a marathon and then someone sticks your head in a bucket, right? And a bucket of water. And okay, now you don't get to breathe. You want to be able to get your breath kind of thing, just like they are. So keeping them wet, like you said, and it really, like if you know what you're doing and if you're able to, like I really like the ones where like if you aren't sure, you're sitting beside the client with that fish, right? Like they can maybe hold one part of it, but you've got where it really matters, especially on those pike with the gill plate there. So it's kind of, that helps out there, but really if you know what you're doing, it's up out of the water picture and it could be like 10-15 seconds, right? And back in the water. So I think that's the thing that helps. And I think too is when we were talking about doing stuff every day, like some of the trout spots say maybe you go there 2 days in a row or you go there one day, not the next, but then the other one, like you're back around there, and with the number of trout that you catch in a day too, like you would be noticing if something was wrong with what you're doing, right? Like you would start to see signs of that. So I think that's another big thing. But yeah, it's especially with those bigger fish, like you said, that support's very important, because lots of times you get that, say you're holding the head with your left hand, you get that right hand too far, and now your stomach or your back is looking like a U, and like it could snap, right? So you want to get that support right. But yeah, I think I agree with you there too. The dropping of the fish is the thing you really want to worry about.
Yeah, and even bringing the fish out of the net, right? Like I think that's a big thing too, because you can hold a fish quote unquote perfectly, but when you're pulling a fish out of the net, that's a lot of strain being put on the fish's neck, right? So I'm always very careful to, as soon as that fish's head comes out, put that arm on the belly and be bringing it out, not have all that weight being pushed on the neck, because obviously, if it's a 30-pound fish, well, that's a lot of torque being put on one side. And then if it was to then start thrashing, well then, not to say every fish that swims away with blood or whatever is going to die, but even the fish that do swim away, quote unquote, healthy, you don't know what could happen. So it's always good to do those extra steps. So just to remove any potential, right? If it takes 5 minutes or it takes 30 seconds, whatever it does, just try to go out of your way to make it comfortable on the fish to get that picture.
Yeah. Well, that's
100%.
What was it? Oh, I totally lost my train of thought there with the big, So one thing I was going to say, I noticed with those little, like the little fish, they just never seem to stop, right? It's constant, like jerking around, slashing around. But I've noticed once you would get a hold of that bigger pike and you're ready to take it out of the net, it's calm as can be. Like I didn't have, I think maybe like one or two of my pike over 40 decided to make any kind of movement while we were taking pictures. And Yeah. And it was fine. Like, I find they're quite calm once you do get them in the hold and then you go to release them, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. For whatever reason, it definitely seems that lake trout want to be thrashing more, which is obviously a concern for dropping them. But yeah, I mean, I try to keep them in the net, and sometimes it helps too, depending on how long you fought them. Sometimes with pike, if you, you know, caught them and it's on the line for 20 seconds and then you net it, well, that fish is still pretty fresh. So and as soon as you go to grab out of the net, I mean, he's still full of piss and vinegar, and then that obviously has the chance of it thrashing. But kind of letting them sit in the net for a little bit, you know, as long as the gills aren't wrapped around the net mesh, and always keep them horizontal and making sure they're not going belly up, and then letting them sit there for a bit and then to take them out. But yeah, I mean, just paying attention, like you said, right? Every situation is different. If a fisherman's able to fight a fish where it's not to exhaustion, but I mean, it's tired. So when you do go to hold it, it's not going to be freaking out.
Yeah. Well, I guess with that exhaustion point, do you want to touch on the fin color?
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting one, because I think specifically, like, we've got a lot of pike up here, and people are quick to comment, oh, the fins are red. And like, I've had fish where you've hooked them, landed them in 30 seconds, taken a picture, say with all within a minute. So it's not like this fish is exhausted and the fish just turns red. Is it a sign of stress? Yes. I mean, I don't know if it's a sign of really dangerous stress, and as far as some people would call out. But I don't know whether it's our fish are turned red sooner or what, but I don't think it seems like there's no rhyme or reason to it, whether the fish is netted and it thrashes in the net, or whether it gets scooped and you just scoop it out and rip it out with your hand and then take a picture. It just seems like these fish's fins definitely do turn red more so than maybe other lakes, or maybe I'm just more aware of it. But yeah, I don't really know. I mean, it definitely is not a great thing, but I don't think it's a killing thing. I think it's something to pay attention to. And even some of the silver pike naturally already have like a really almost red tipped fin. Regardless of how you catch them, you see them in the water and you can see right away that their fins are red. But I mean, it's definitely something to pay attention to. I mean, at the end of the day, it's as soon as you can take a picture and let them go and hope he swims off and take your time and hope for the best, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that's what I was going to mention, is with the ability to sight fish there, which is so different than any other place. Like, your ability to sight fish, you can see, like, and we know, I think I mentioned the board, like the guide board, in the last episode, but we know where each other have been the previous, well, what is it, like 4 or 5 days now with the two boards. So you know where people have been, so you could have an idea when these fish had kind of last seen people. And obviously there could be other factors that stress a fish, but it is quite often to see those fish swimming around, and they, especially the silvers, like you said, they already have that red tinge to the fins.
Yeah, and I think that's just a different variation of just same as how they don't have spots, right? It's just a clear coating on their skin compared to the spotted. And I mean, I think that's just something that's with the genetics of them, some more than others. But yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah, and I guess transitioning away from the fish topic a little bit, I see on your stories there you've been messing around with a couple different new electronics.
Yeah, it's actually been pretty exciting. So shout out to the fishing hole big time. I was having some issues with my unit. I mean, I've had it for a while, and like you said, touch back on what you talk about gear, right? It's one thing if you try something for a week or two and it's like, hey, that works. And I mean, not knocking Hummingbird by any means. I mean, they are tried and true when it comes to being up here battered in the wind and the waves and getting soaked day in and day out. I mean, I'm not covering up my unit. It sits on my boat for 100 days of the year. And I had a Hummingbird Helix 9 in the sun. I'm bleached, water spotted. Yeah. So I had this Helix 9 for a while. I want to say I got it in 2016. So that's a lot of hours, if you want to put on hours. I mean, it's a lot of uses on that. And then I just had some issues with the screen flickering in and off, and I might be able to get it repaired. But it's one of those things where it's like, I mean, you're on the water day in and day out, so you need new electronics. And I reached out to the fishing hole, and they had a Helix 9, but it was a Gen 4, which is what I really wanted because of the mega side imaging, which is definitely a game changer when it comes to clarity. But yeah, I picked up that, which was awesome. So that's my go-to unit when it comes to searching for fish. And right now, when it comes to locating more cabbage beds or just maybe thicker beds, and then also finding the balls of bait fish, which is a big thing when it comes to fishing for lake trout right now, which has done phenomenal. And just the clarity of the screen. I mean, when you put a Helix 9 in the Helix 9, I mean, people are like, oh, it's still a 9. I'm like, yeah, but you don't understand the updates that have gone into with a Gen 4 with the chirp and everything that entails. It's been sweet. But yeah, they were able to hook me up to have one on there, so I was glad I was able to get one, and basically didn't really miss a beat. And then a friend of mine who was up here who caught that big silver pike, Ryan, he was up here and he had a Panoptix with a Garmin. And he was like, should I bring it up? Should I not? And I was like, sure, dude. Like, I've used it before and it's pretty cool. And I must say, like, you want to talk about something that, I mean, people use the word game changer. I mean, it is, it's unbelievable. We were fishing with it for 6 days, basically. And it's a video game. Like, it allows you to basically, summarizes what you already thought. So I've already known, like, that lake trout are always following. When I put an underwater camera on my line and I'm trolling, you review the footage back at camp and it's like, we didn't catch any fish, but every single minute there was a fish following or it came back in and never hit. And with the live scope, it allows you to basically put that on. So we're jigging and there's fish everywhere. There's three of us jigging bondies and there's fish all around our baits, but nothing's eating. And it's that for 20 minutes. And we go next spot, same thing. And it's just like, if you didn't have that Garmin, yeah, the your regular hummingbird shows that there's fish, but you can't see movement. Like, obviously, if you know how a Garmin, a live scope works, I mean, it's not a graph. It's a live image of what's happening. And you can see how the fish are reacting. And it's even interesting to see how fast fish move, right? One thing interesting with lake trout is they're very competitive, right? So when you have a fish and it comes up, usually there's always a follower, and to be able to look at the Garmin and you're like, dude, there's six fish following, and you can see it before it's happening. And you're like, get ready. And then you look down and like, there they come. Right. And there's six other fish following. That was just unbelievable. But one of the biggest things, like, I don't think that would change lake trout fishing because we've already known that. But what it comes down to, I think, is huge is the late season pike. So when the pike move out of the shallow bays, there's kind of like a lull where it's like, well, they're not on cabbage. Like, where are they? And we know where they are, but it's just very hard to locate because it's very, very spread out. But we're along these islands with live scope and the Panoptix setup, you can steer and you can directionally look at where you're fishing and where you want the transducer pointed. And when you're doing that, you can see when your lure hits the water and you can find fish out in the middle of nowhere, right, where these pike are hiding around islands. And it just, it really allows for, number one, a visualization. It allows you to basically call out. It allows you to define new areas. And it's super neat. I mean, the price tag is a hefty one. But after seeing that in play for a week, it's like, I've heavily debated it. I mean, not obviously not this year, but going forward, because it would definitely give you an edge on fish and where they're at and how they're reacting, right? Whether it was a bad color bondy or a different colored jig or whatever. But I think it would definitely allow you to hook more and hopefully bigger fish. It's a pretty sweet technology, and it's very cool.
Yeah, no, that's I guess for anyone wondering if they were like, how did Zach get it? If you saw the second play that normally came in and the number of Amazon packages and whatnot, I didn't order anything because I was like, the first week I was like, oh, I'm only here for three more weeks. I mean, I could have ordered some stuff, but yeah, like the packages that come in for the boys order and stuff and whatnot is pretty hilarious.
Yeah, no, that wasn't mine. I mean, that was I would have liked for it to stay here. But yeah, it's wild. I mean, even when we were, there's the perspective mode, I want to say it's called. So it basically allows, it's like a side imaging. And you can see cabbage as well. And you can see when a fish is swimming through the cabbage. And it's just like, I had Ryan at the front of the boat and I'd be like, I could see where his fly line was hitting the water and it was dripping in. And then I would like turn the boat and I'm like, I think that's a fish. And I'm like, hey, cast it like you're 3 o'clock and he'd land and I'd see him land and I'd see this fish. I'm like, dude, that's a fish. Here it comes. But you can literally sit back with your hand on the left hand on the tiller and your right hand on the Panoptix. And then you just be staring at the screen with your beer gut, be looking at the screen, just be calling out fish if you really wanted to get super inactive at the back of the boat, because it's a pretty cool technology.
Yeah, and you've got the...
That's crazy.
I was just going to say, Zach has the biggest beer gut of us all, so...
Oh, yeah.
I believe you were there. It's one of those things where you don't have to move. Like, you could just be like, oh, yeah, I saw in the Panoptix it was small. I don't even want to get up to take this fish off, right? Or you're like, I saw that fish come over. It was big, right? And you know, it's cool. Yeah. It's really cool.
Yeah.
That's crazy. I didn't realize that you can actually see like the lure hit the water from the surface.
Yes,
like,
yes, you can see the lure hit the water. We were going to do it where you could jump in the water, because I think there's people that have already done that, but it would just be cool to see, because I know when we've done ice fishing and it's 5 feet. Well, obviously the reception and the way the transducer work is much better and much clearer. Yeah. And you can tell whether it's a lake trout or not a lake trout. We were fishing in Sask actually with it. And we could tell whether it was a walleye or a pike just because of the way that the fish was moving. Here, because we're fishing at 50 feet, it's more or less a blob, but you can see the fish turn on it. And then obviously the size of the mark in comparison to the fish would definitely be an indicator of how big the fish was. Even bait balls, mm-hmm. like how the bait ball moves across the screen, it was just like this jelly-like fish motion that would just kind of flicker through. It was pretty cool.
Very cool. Yeah.
I'd like some.
I seen it on your story the other day, and I assumed that you had picked one up, but yours. But
no, it wasn't mine. I wish it would have stayed. But no, it's one of those things that definitely made me question. I mean, I still think the hummingbird side imaging, I think, is number one when it comes to that, and that's mainly why I wanted it. Obviously, the chirp and the down view and all that down imaging is great as well, but if you had that side by side where you could basically be, you know, trolling out in the middle of nowhere on side imaging, marking something, and then using your live scope to really hone in on them and act and react to how they're acting, would be pretty cool.
Yeah.
You're going to have to get your boy Sam Moore to hook you up with his guy from Hummingbird, because, well, they have Mega Live imaging, yeah. Right? So that's compatible with your G4 Helix 9, so... you're going to have to slide into Sam's DMs and say, hey, hook me up with a Hummingbird Mega Live.
Exactly. No, and I've used with Sam when we were fishing in Florida, I got to use his Hummingbird and with the Live, yeah. And the 360. And it is very good. I don't know if it would be anything worse or better. I think Garmin's been around a little bit longer, so I think the consensus is that they kind of have it figured out. That being said, the Hummingbird that we used, he had it on his trolling motor. So basically wherever we were going, you'd be directionally looking. And same thing, you'd see a school yeah. of fish, you see your bass, you'd toss your bait out, you'd see your lure hit the water, you'd see it work through the water column, and you could see how the fish reacted to it, you could see them hit it. I think it'd be the same thing. The biggest thing for me is just about the depth of the water, because here we're fishing in 50 feet opposed to the bass guys that are fishing, you know, 5 to 35, I don't know. But yeah, I mean, that's definitely yeah. compatible. It would be the easy route. I mean, I don't have to buy a unit because I have the unit, so that's a good point, actually.
There you go. Yeah, I guess we pretty well had you for just over an hour here, but I guess maybe coming closer to the end of the episode here and kind of working with that, what's the second half of the season looking like for you guys? Like, what's it looking like towards the end here?
Yeah, I mean, the biggest thing for us is the lake trout spawn. So a lot of places, you know, start early and end a little bit mid-season just because maybe they don't have the clients for it, or they don't have the facility or whatever, but we're able to go a little bit later. And the big attraction is to be able to cast for lake trout in shallow water, because typically, you mean, they're always known as a deep water fish, which they are, but they obviously come in shallow to feed as also to lay eggs. And we have a lot of cool spots in the lake come later August that people can do that. And it's ridiculous, right? Like you see how fishing is with lake trout when you're fishing deep. I mean, they're pulling down. So basically now you add that fight, but instead of going down, they're going out. So you're fishing 5 feet mm-hmm. of water, and it's just like a pike where they just like scream out drag rather than go down below the boat. And it's a pretty fun time, and you catch a lot of fish. It's ridiculous. You think people would have enough after 2-3 days of catching, you know, a dozen fish over 20 pounds, but it's nonstop. It's wild.
Yeah. Yeah. That part doesn't get old, but, I guess Brian, I had one more thing. But did you have anything before that?
Hop into what you had, and if we have time, I'll ask something.
Okay, well, I was going to ask, I guess, obviously, you're up at the lodge. I think we talked about both lodges last time you were on. Maybe a bit more about Sparks, just because of the wolf puppy situation. But I guess for people that would potentially be interested in going up, because I know we've had messages and stuff about it, I guess, what are the two lodges? And obviously every lodge is different. So maybe like a rundown of what you can expect at Lac La Mar and what you could expect at Sparks, or kind of stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So obviously there's two lodges here. The owner, Greg DeSome and Dave Thompson, are both the owners up here, and they have two lodges. So Lac La Mar is where I work and where obviously Logan worked. And the biggest thing to expect, I think, is just a large, a large amount of fish. You're going to catch a lot of fish, and the average is quite good. You mean you're going to get a lot of 40-inch pike. You're probably going to get a lot of trout over 37 inches, and I think there's definitely fish over 40, but I just don't say that everyone's going to get a 40-inch lake trout because it usually doesn't happen. But I'm pretty confident saying that everybody's going to get a 40-inch pike, if not a couple, and bigger. And yeah, I mean, the accommodations at both places are exactly the same. We got running water. We got our own chef. You mean you don't need to bring any food. The boats are all very reliable. You're on 40s at one lodge and 50s on the other. The biggest thing I think is that I think with Sparks, you have bigger lake trout. It's a much deeper lake than Lac La Mar is. I don't think you're going to have as many lake trout, but I think your chance at a 35 to 45 pound lake trout is definitely a real thing. You mean it's up to 150 feet in some places. From what guests have told me, I don't think you catch as many fish on average. I mean, if you're used to catching, say, a 70 fish day isn't uncommon here, there, that would be uncommon. You mean I think you're more realistic around that 30 to 60 on average. Maybe you'll get something a little bit more. The pike fishing there, I think, it's a little bit different because here the clarity and these huge bays people can go into and sight fish at Lac La Mar. At Sparks is definitely very clear, and there is sight fishing capabilities, but I think there's just not a lot of big open areas like we have here to be able to just cruise around in 5 feet of water and be like, oh, there's one, oh, there's another one, and you can do that for a few hours. With Sparks, just the way that the landscape of the lake is, it's just a faster drop off, so you don't really have that option. But there's big fish at both. From a guide standpoint, I like Sparks just because it allows for more just what ifs because it's such a deep body of water and you control a lot of big baits and you can catch some big pike trolling. And I haven't been there a lot. I mean, I've spent probably a couple months there worth of guiding and fishing, so I know a little bit, but not like Lac La Mar where I've been here for a handful of years. So, all those obviously can be found. If you were to reach out to Logan or myself, we would have more information if somebody was genuinely interested in booking. But I mean, I always tell people if you have a specific week that works for you, I mean, always try to book ahead of time because stuff fills up fast. So if people can know what they want and try to lock it down sooner, the better.
Yeah. Yeah. So what I picked up there is you're saying Kyle's not unhooking near as many fish as we are.
Well, it depends. I mean, I think Kyle, he's had some great fishing days. But yeah, I think on average he might say that, but I mean, at the end of the day, who's the bigger sucker, right? Yeah. I mean, I don't mind not unhooking 100 fish a day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And I asked that question because I don't know if Deb will be listening to this episode, but I'm not sure if he'd contacted you guys yet, but Mike was looking to book for the lake trout spawn with one of his buddies. So she was asking like, what's the comparison between Sparks and Lac La Mar? So I could kind of, I guess spawn would work too. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the biggest thing with that is like, it's an unknown. And I think we're very clear about that, right? Like Sparks hasn't had a full operational year. This is our very first year for that. So there's a lot of things we'll be figuring out. Obviously we know what it's a kind of fishing, but obviously when it comes to when the fish are at certain places. So that's one thing for the lake trout at Sparks. I mean, we don't really have a lockdown. Hey, this is where the fish are going to be. This is the time frame. At Lac La Mar, because we've been here year after year, we can say, oh, you come this week, on average, the fish are going to be here. We'll use this kind of lure. We're going to fish the deeper water. So at Sparks, I would guess once we have locked that down, it would be very comparable because the trout typically all go to the same spot. So if you find that spot, you're going to catch fish after fish. But that's one thing we don't necessarily have locked down. At Lac La Mar, we obviously would know when and where the fish are going to be. So if somebody is more of an exploratory kind of mindset, I think Sparks is a great idea. Obviously, after this year, we'll have even more information and more knowledge. And going forward, we'll be able to definitely give more, I guess, specifics as to where and when the fish are at.
Yeah. Yeah, and it looks like those boys are spending lots of time after guiding out there too, right? Like, they're trying to find those fish just as much as the next person. So I think that would be that would interest me a lot because I like that exploring. Obviously, I got my whole month up there was exploring, but like you said, that unknown, that's the cool part. You don't know what, like that place, what was it? It hadn't, no one had been in there for like 12 years or something before.
Yeah, no one had been there since I think like 2006, and even then you could argue, well, people were there, but it's not like it was a fishing lodge or people were there fishing every day like places are. I mean, I would say it's basically an untouched fishery in comparison to Lac La Mer. I mean, yeah, we're untouched, but we've been operational for a while, and fish have definitely been caught. But when you compare it to somewhere that hasn't been, I mean, that's exciting too, right? Because it's quote unquote fresh fish, right? But haven't really had lures thrown in front of them.
Yeah, there you go. It's the unknown. What did you have, Brandon?
Honestly, you guys kind of touched on it. I was going to ask about booking and kind of the whole process. If you guys book a couple years in advance, if somebody wanted to book, do they really have to get on it type thing, or you know, a year in advance is good? Or
it honestly depends on the week. Like usually, the first 3 weeks of the season book the fastest, and the reason for that is because sight fishing is obviously what Lac La Mer is known for, and everybody wants to cast to a pike in a foot of water, which I get is pretty cool. The downside, I think, is that people think, well, if I'm not here in the first 3 weeks, well, then I won't catch big fish, and it's like, well, that's totally not true. You won't catch fish in a foot of water like you would in the first week, but I like later in July, this time, even going into August, where I think definitely fish numbers are higher, where I'll go into a cabbage patch and the fish all congregate in one spot. It's not like we're in early season where you could go in, and Logan experienced this, where a bay you went to 3 days ago had fish, or somebody else went there and you went there and it's empty. Typically later in the year, you're not going to have that, where if you find any cabbage, the fish are on there. So long story short, yeah, I mean, if you have a specific time frame that works for you, I would say book it and try to get that sorted out. But it definitely seems like the first few weeks of the season go fast. And then obviously the spawn, there's not a lot of options in other places to do that. So when there is lakes like us that offer that, those weeks go fast, because I think there's us and Lake Athabasca that offers that. And there might be Cree Lake that offers that, but there's not a lot of places. So when somebody knows that this place offers spawn fishing, everyone's going to kind of flock to it. But if you're hey, I just want to go catch big fish and I'm not really partial, like midsummer, there's usually openings and there's usually a lot of fish to be caught. So.
Okay.
There you go.
Perfect.
There you go.
Well, good to know. Yeah. Anybody that wants to hit up Zach and get your booking in, definitely do so.
will they be dealing with Jesse for that?
I don't know. I mean, I think obviously Greg is the owner, and I think most of the bookings all go through him. Obviously, I have people reach out to me.
Okay.
And so everything just more or less gets transferred to Greg, and he'd be inputting that. I obviously have an idea of who's here and what our next few years look like roughly. But for specifics, usually at the end of the day, if you reach out to me, we'll get it sorted out and get you sorted, get you fishing.
Yeah. There you go. Well, we've kept you for basically an hour and a quarter here, so we should probably let you go. At least you don't have any night. Yeah.
He should be eating bear right now.
Yeah.
I should be.
Yeah. No, I guess you don't have to go night fishing or anything, so you can probably just chill at the lodge. But yeah, I mean, I guess also no sunset, so you could be out there till whatever time you want.
No, there are sunsets. I think it's 11:10. The days are getting shorter.
Oh, is it? Not.
That's typically what happens after June rolls around. So it is getting shorter. We're up at sunrise, what, at 4:10, I think, right now. Sunset's at 11:15, something.
Okay. Well, there you go. Well, I guess we'll let you go here. Thanks for coming on, and nice talking to you again, and good luck with the rest of the season there.
Yeah,
no problem. Yeah, we appreciate it. Thanks for looking after Logan for that month. Appreciate it.
No problem. I mean, it was a lot on my part. I mean, there was a lot of sleepless nights and a lot of stressed out, and a few tears were shed. But I mean, I think you came out on top.
Yeah. No. Perfect. I'm still alive. It's the north. I'm still alive.
Awesome. Thanks, Zach.
No, thank you guys.
So that does it for another episode with Zach Brown. We appreciate him taking the time to sit down with us. We know he doesn't really have the greatest internet up there, but right now he doesn't have any clients, so he had some extra time to sit down with us before he went out to go fishing. I think it was like 8 o'clock by the time we got off, but it doesn't get dark out there till just after 11, I think he was saying. So squeezed some time in for us before he was heading out to catch some fish leisurely. And just another great episode. I mean, it was super cool talking about that 50-inch silver pike. That's a rare one, you know. It's pretty cool, especially the fact that they were filming for a TV show and whatnot, and got a bunch of different footage of that. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I know. I saw that on my way home from Flin Flon, as we had mentioned in the intro there. I saw that when I'd stopped for gas, and I was like, what are all these posts about, kind of thing? And I watched the video. Yeah. I was like, are you kidding me? Like, that's just, a 50-inch pike is nuts. And then to add to the fact that it's a silver pike, just icing on the cake there for sure.
Yeah, so a lot of great topics covered by Zach. I mean, the guy's got so much information. He fishes so much and has such a good insight, especially even, you know, about fish handling and the electronics part of it. And it was kind of cool just kind of getting to catch up with him. You know, it's been over a year, so we appreciate you, Zach, for taking the time, sitting down with us and taking care of Logan for his time up there.
Yeah, being the camp daddy. Yeah. I guess before we kind of take off here, we better mention our presenting sponsors, 13 Fishing. Definitely will be putting some of the some 13 Fishing products to use, probably some of the newer reels that I've gotten and the rods. Do lots of jigging where I'll be going up north, a little different than I do down south here. So looking forward to putting those rods to use. And then I know the VMC Moon Eye jig, that'll be tied on to a couple of my rods throughout the whole entire trip. So I'll definitely be looking forward to that.
Yeah, I feel like you really can't go wrong with a jig. So with that being said, head on over to 13fishing.ca or Rapella.ca, and you can get yourself 15% off the entire website. All 9 brands that are on that website, including VMC, Suffix, Rapella, 13fishing, Storm. And if you're maybe wanting to get ahead of the game, if there's anything available for Strike Master for ice fishing season, go snag yourself maybe a suit or an auger. I'm not too sure what the inventory is looking like for that, but 15% off using the code Weekend Warriors. And lots of great savings, lots of great products, so go check them out.
Yeah, for sure. We appreciate everyone that tuned into this episode. We have some pretty cool ones that we have planned to come up here, so definitely stay tuned for those, and good luck fishing.
Thanks for tuning in to the Weekend Warriors Fishing Podcast. If you enjoyed the show, be sure to leave a review on your favorite listening platform so we can reach more anglers just like you. Find us on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube for media updates and behind-the-scenes content.